Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Bijou Banter, broadcasting from the Zoom studio. I didn't think we'd be back here again, but thanks to the weather outside on this lovely Earth Day, we decided to remain safe and stay indoors. It is Friday, April 22nd of 2022, and in the Zoom studio, we got Orson Codd.
Hello.
Daniel McGregor-Hoyer.
Hello.
And we have a special guest. Once again, we have Grace McCabe of SPP joining us.
Hello.
And today on this discussion of Bijou Banter, we are going to be talking about two films. The first one being The Northmen, which is Robert Eggers' latest Viking epic. And we're also going to be talking about X, the latest A24 horror film. And we're going to begin with The Northman. As stated, this is from director Robert Eggers, who his first two films were The Witch and The Lighthouse. And it stars, where is the cast list? Here it is. It stars Alexander Skarsgård, Nicole Kidman, Clive Bang, Anya Taylor-Joy, Ethan Hawke, Bjork, and Willem Dafoe. And the story of The Northman is about a Viking prince who flees his kingdom after his uncle kills his father and vows to return back to claim his rightful place in the throne and avenge his father's death. What do we think about this film?
This Robert Eggers, his first two films, I thought they were fine. They weren't particularly like my kind of horror films, but I can appreciate what he was doing with them. He's definitely an auteur of this filmmaking generation. And so The Northman is definitely his most, I think, mainstream film that will probably appeal to the masses, but it still has, like, you know, his signs, like his flavors that he injects into his films. And it's incredible. It's truly crazy. The performances are great. Everyone is talking about Alexander Skarsgård and Anya Taylor-Joy. She never misses. It does have a couple setbacks, which maybe we'll get into, but for the most part, I was just truly floored at how visually striking this film was and the attention to detail Robert Eggers puts into this when it comes to like the Viking era.
Yeah, I think one thing to say about Robert Eggers is that Robert Eggers does a lot of research into his the settings of his films. I think he really embraces that. He did it with The Witch, he did it with The Lighthouse, and he did it with this. I think he really embraced a lot of the lore, Vikings lore with this, because apparently this was the original basis for Shakespeare's Hamlet. So apparently it predated Shakespeare. And I was really impressed with like how this was filmed. I think it was shot incredibly nicely. I really liked the musical score. The acting was really good. But I think what can kind of make it fall into like, whether it's better than The Lighthouse, I don't think it's going to be. I think The Lighthouse was just something else. And, you know, it really embraced all that insanity that was going on. This, like Orson said, this is definitely something that appeals more to the masses and mainstream audiences than it does really to like, you know, diehard indie film goers. And so there's going to be a lot of things in this film that definitely feel generic. And I think with the fact that this was obviously Hamlet for Vikings, I don't think it necessarily succeeded in that. I mean, I think there's a lot of things like in the first half dragged and was felt incredibly, it wasn't paced that well in the first half. I could not get into the characters that quickly. It felt like it was trying to go through the same steps that, you know, typically the Hamlet stories go through, but it didn't get me hooked until the second half, like at least in halfway through the film, because that's when it got really interesting. It got really insane. You start to see the revenge. You start to see these characters really come into a different light. Like there's a huge twist in this film that I wasn't expecting, and it really worked out, because I think the second half of the film really triumphed over the first half, where it was just the general setup and the general going through the motions of this type of storyline. But otherwise, I think I was definitely entertained. It's still a really good movie. I don't think it's ever going to hit the height that The Lighthouse did, but I think it was still really entertaining.
Well, I was just going to get out of the way. I feel like I personally can't discuss the particulars of this movie, not having seen it yet, which will change in like 4 hours. But I guess I'm most curious. I have seen The Lighthouse, and I did leave The Lighthouse rather disturbed. I don't expect to leave the theater disturbed, I guess, with The Northman. I guess I don't know what genre he's going for.
Yeah, I thought this movie was awesome. Robert Eggers has become probably one of the most unique directors working today. The Lighthouse, I think, is, for lack of better words, one of the best movies ever made. The Witch is a very impressive debut film. I don't think it's a great film, personally. I think there's a lot of improvement that could be had, but even from just that first film that he made, he established that he has so much talent, a very unique talent in terms of world building, attention to detail, especially in not only set design and costume design, but particularly dialogue too. His films have a heavy emphasis on period dialect. And as soon as I first saw The Lighthouse, I was like, I'm going to be on board for whatever Eggers does. I don't know. I don't care what, if he makes a movie set in space and it's about like Teletubbies or something, I'll go see it. So for that reason, The Northman was my most anticipated film of 2022. And I was not disappointed. I really, really enjoyed it. And going from something like The Lighthouse, which is so ambiguous, so mysterious, and so just strange, to something like The Northman, which is, for lack of better words, pretty straightforward for a Viking epic. There are, obviously, it does take a lot of liberties, and it is kind of what Daniel said, a retelling of Hamlet. But it's just such a beautifully made work of cinema. Like, just visually, it is striking. The action scenes are incredibly intense and brooding. But even though the story has been done before, Hamlet retellings have been happening for ages now, I think it still manages to be a very compelling narrative. I really like the characters, and I really like how it explores those themes of vengeance in a way where our main character does it to avenge the death of his father, but ultimately becomes even more corrupted to the point where he's losing what his motivation even is. That's really fascinating. And I think in terms of immersing you into the time period of the Vikings, which admittedly I'm not all that familiar with Viking lore or mythology, but it just has this strong feeling of authenticity that we don't see with many other movies. You could tell that almost everything, with the exception of some CGI animals, was done practically. And it really, really looks good because it's actually there. It's a physical set, it's physical stunts, and it's just living, breathing proof that there's still an element of authenticity that could be brought to the world of cinema that I don't think is really done as much. And coming from Robert Eggers, like, that's really great to see. And it only proves that he doesn't have to just do horror films to create something that is so distinct. He can branch off into other genres because this is his historical epic. It's not a horror film, but it's just so distinct and so original at the same time.
One of the things about this that actually genuinely surprised me, and I won't get into too specific because the film is just coming out today, but obviously with Eggers' two other films, the Vavitch and The Lighthouse, you know, they have some element of trippiness to it. Mm-hmm. But to me, that trippiness that they have is more confusing. Like, what is going on? Like, what did I watch? What does it all mean? You know, did that actually happen or whatever? And obviously some of that bleeds over into The Northman. But one of the, you know, it's a pretty straightforward Viking story, as we've said. It's not, you know, there aren't dragons or anything. It's not, you know, Skyrim Vikings. It's, again, it's pretty straightforward. And one of the things that I genuinely didn't expect that it was going to do was be the most trippy of his films. And again, no spoilers, but there's some like cosmic stuff going on that felt very H.P. Lovecraft. And I was like, I did not expect this. Like, some of the visuals, and I get it, that part, you know, obviously has to be CG, but it was just truly like one of those things where watching it on the big screen, I was like, I can't believe I'm seeing this right now in a straightforward Viking story. It doesn't feel fantasy like The Green Knight did. It feels more, again, cosmic and trippy. So to me, that was a very pleasant surprise. It kept it original and fresh, and I liked it. It was a good blending of genres.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. I mean, I think like the whole Viking aspect really helped this film. I think that North mythology is probably one of the most interesting mythologies along Greek mythology, because I think there's just a lot of, is because the thing is with Greek mythology, where the stories don't necessarily have an end to them, Norse mythology does, like, basically that's the whole basis. It's like basically everybody and cease to exist at the end. That's just kind of the blunt nature of Norse mythology. But I think it's kind of like interesting how they represent that. And, you know, visually, like seeing a lot of like this type of prophecy type story. And because, like I said, it's been done to death. And I think that's what kind of keeps me from like fully loving this film, because, you know, I love The Lighthouse so much. I don't think I'm ever going to see a film like The Lighthouse again. I mean, I think because it's just so many areas where the film just puts you in unexpected places, and it's disturbing. And plus, like, it's a very good theatrical experience. And this, I would say, is too as well. I mean, the sound design and the cinematography really work for me. Along with, like, you know, bringing in those bits of the mythology into it without having to distract away from the story. I just think it's like it just doesn't necessarily click with me as much as it did with The Lighthouse. But I'm still glad I saw it, and I think I'm really glad that Eggers dove deep into this story, and I think that really works in the film's favor.
I think I've heard a lot of people kind of been comparing this to The Lighthouse, which is understandable because it is following up on arguably one of the most talked about horror films of the past 10 years, and also it is his latest film. And I was doing that too for obvious reasons, because it's Robert Eggers. But really thinking about it, I honestly don't think it's necessarily that fair of a comparison to keep comparing it to The Lighthouse and holding it up to that standard, because they are so different. Like, these stories, The Lighthouse was about two guys basically just going insane. This one is about a hero's journey. And so obviously there's going to be some differences, and people are saying like, oh, it's like, it's not as great as The Lighthouse, but it's not meant to be The Lighthouse. This is an entirely different beast of a narrative. And the one thing that I've kind of heard from some people is that they think the story is too generic or too conventional. And yeah, they are right. It is a conventional story, but I'd argue that you can still tell a conventional story, but the difference is if you tell it well and extremely compellingly, then it doesn't matter if the story is conventional. I think that's what The Northman does. We've seen stories like Hamlet, and Hamlet's been adapted into many different retellings. For example, The Lion King is essentially a kid's version of Hamlet, but it takes in directions that are not only hit the right beats and the right marks pretty flawlessly, but like kind of what Orson said, it does go into sort of a more fantastical mythology that is very unexpected. It's not just a straightforward Viking epic. It does take its liberties. And even though unfortunately, Robert Eggers didn't receive final cut on this film, he should have after making The Lighthouse, quite frankly, but he still managed to do a lot that I'm shocked that someone working for like kind of a more mainstream studio like Focus Features was able to get away with a lot of stuff, because it's pretty violent, that's for sure. It's bloody. And
that's where I think he didn't get final cut, because a lot of the early reviews were like, oh, it's blood soaked, it's brutal, it's violent, and I'm like, whoa, that makes sense. You know, it's a Viking story, and yes, it has its moments where they show things, but I felt like, and Kel and I were talking about this after, they kept cutting away. Like, you know, a guy swings the sword, and right as it's about to, you know, hit the person's neck or something, it cuts away, and you just see the blood splatter on, you know, Alexander Skarsgård's face. But I mean, it's obviously got its moments, but it wasn't, I feel like when they say final cut, it makes me think, because Robert Eggers doesn't strike me as someone that would naturally do that. He probably, you know, went with the practical effects, and you got to see the heads, you know, getting cut off more than they did or something. And the studio was like, well, we don't want to get an NC-17 rating. We got to go with rated R. So they would like make him cut, you know, that split second, if that makes sense. And again, we do see a lot of stuff, but there were a couple times where I was like, we're skipping away.
Yeah, I did look up like what was exactly cut. Apparently, they cut a lot of, I'm sure they cut some of the violence just so they wouldn't get an NC-17 rating. But in terms of that too, like, I think more it's just the actions that are displayed on screen. The movie has a very primal animalistic instinct in this movie in terms of the actions and just how violence is used. And I think showing that and not showing necessarily like the wounds themselves, like there's some really, don't get me wrong, there's some really awesome kills, particularly one near the last third that is probably one of the most satisfying kills I've seen in a movie. But it just has like, the action of seeing that and not necessarily turning away to the decaying body in a way kind of shows how brutal the violence is without actually showing all that. It's just the action itself. I think that's, I could see why you don't want to see, like, the studios wouldn't be like, okay, let's just not show the body or the blood or anything. But it's the action that I think gives you that emotional gut punch. And also, basically, Eggers, he made a movie that was a lot longer. I think the original cut was almost 3 hours long. And apparently what happened in test screens is that they thought the movie, the opening, was too confusing and too slow paced. They thought the story was too confusing, which I find very surprising because I thought it was pretty straightforward in terms of what we got. And also just the basic journey that we're following with Amleth is, it's not, I didn't personally find it too confusing. I don't know if you two disagreed or anything.
I never found it confusing. I think because it has the basis that initially made Hamlet, it wasn't too confusing. You know, there was a lot of the mystical elements that were going on in the beginning of the film, but I don't think it was confusing. I do think, though, that I am interested to kind of see if they would release Eggers' final cut, like the 3-hour cut. I mean,
I think they should. Yeah.
They definitely should, because I think the beginning of this film just wasn't paced that well. I think they they kind of rushed the mythology a bit in the beginning, and they kind of rushed to, like, the main action of the plot. And it just really didn't feel like that, you know, you had time to embrace these settings or this mythology. That felt like it was super rushed. We didn't get to know too many of the characters that well. I just kind of felt like we were just thrusted into the story, which I think kind of was a bit hard to connect with the characters in the beginning. But I think as it went along, we were able to connect a little bit more as a lot of, like, those conventional elements of the stories, like the Hamlet storyline changed throughout. And I think it really helped the film, because I think otherwise it would have been just another generic, like, Hamlet retelling. So I'm interested to kind of see if, like, you know, they released that 3-hour cut to see, like, you know, at the beginning isn't as rushed as, like, the rest of it.
Yeah, there definitely are two people that are in the film that they really are marketing as being in it. And I'm like, are they actually in it that much? So that kind of makes sense where maybe those two celebrities were more utilized in the first act. But in the final cut, you know, the first act or the opening is like, what, 15-20 minutes? They're not really in it that much. So I would like to see the 3-hour cut as well, hopefully, like, you know, on a streaming release or a Blu-ray release where it's like, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. And I get it, you know, one of them is a veteran that was in one of his past films, so maybe it was just, you know, kind of a favor bringing his friend, but at the same time it's like, oh well, I want to see more of that person because I know what their acting capabilities are.
See, I kind of disagree. I think the opening, at least the inciting incident, just like what sets him on this journey, I thought was paced very well. Like,
I thought it was too.
Yeah, no, because, like, there's some people that said it was too rushed, which I actually disagree personally, because it doesn't need to, like, draw out or, like, make it seem overly long about, like, oh, why does he have to go on this journey? You obviously know, like, the inciting incident. It's in the trailers too. His father gets killed and he wants vengeance. That's like all you need to know. And I think that's perfect in terms of setting it up and focusing more on his character growth and also his journey to becoming an adult and kind of restoring honor and balance to the throne. And I think even as a kid too, when he's young, showing his relationship, like, with his parents and also kind of the ritualistic natures of this Viking culture, even though they don't linger on it too much, it still leaves the tiniest bit of interpretation that the lighthouse is basically surrounded in, pretty much. So it's nice to see a little bit of that kind of crossover into here. And as soon as it hits, it's like, okay, we immediately know what this character is going to do, and we're all on his side, even though the next scene following basically follows what the antagonist does, and then it creates, like, kind of a moral divide between the character and also yourself as the audience.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking I was just wanting a little bit more of the character, I guess, because I think that was felt really lacking for me in the beginning, is that, you know, we're getting introduced to all these characters, and we're getting introduced. Because I wouldn't say it was like we're, I mean, because obviously we know what's going to happen. It's like, it's the typical Hamlet storyline. But I think it's the fact that I'm not getting time to necessarily like see these characters kind of interact off each other. I mean, we do get a little bit of that interaction. Like when the film opens, we get that little interaction between him and the mother. We get that interaction between him and the father. But we don't get that much of an interaction between like the villain at all with Food the Kid character. I wish we kind of got a little bit more time to be with the characters a bit before we get to the inciting incident. I felt like that would have probably invested me a little bit more. And plus, you know, maybe see a little bit more of this setting, maybe see a little bit more of like what this place is actually like. Because I feel like, because I think Eggers is on the right track. Because I think with like The Lighthouse, which obviously, yeah, they're different types of films, but I think I got time to at least like experience a bit of that setting before like they went into the actual plot of the film. And I feel like that's what I was wanting to see a little bit more with this, is just that I want to be able to, you know, sit with these characters and this place a bit before we get into the actual, get into the actual plot.
Grace, do you have any questions for us regarding the film?
Well, I'm certainly excited to see it. time is ticking down. But yeah, you guys really covered everything without spoiling anything, which I very much appreciate.
Well, there's a moment that I am, when we're talking about studio having Final Cut, I am shocked that it did not get cut.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. They do a lot of stuff.
No, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Everyone in the theater, which I'm sure with the masses, it's going to get the same reaction, but there were maybe, what, 15 of us less?
Yeah,
up, and we were like, what the heck? Like, come on. Like, I get where they were going with it, and it's disturbing. But if we're talking about studio Final Cut, keep 5 extra minutes or whatever and delete, you know, the 10 seconds that made everyone go, ooh.
Yeah, it just shows that like the studios care more about violence and not about all the other stuff. So that's the MPAA for you. So thank you very much once again.
I mean, I don't know. For some reason, I can see what Eggers was doing with that.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I do. I just don't think the masses are going to take it that well.
it's more not, well, kind of visually, but not as like gross. Well, it's hard to say like the right thing.
The image in your head is what makes it gross. That's
the
image
in your hand is more gross than actually seeing the handy scene in The Green Knight. Mm-hmm. So
I think all the like kind of trying to find a way to deviate from that because it is such a strange moment. I really love all the performances in this movie. Like this has it has a really strong cast of great actors. I think Skarsgård in particular, who I haven't really seen a lot of in films recently. I know he was in Godzilla versus Kong and none of the characters were compelling. What?
He was also Tarzan a couple years ago.
Oh, no, I didn't see that one.
I feel like he's been in those movies where it's like he just plays like what, buff action heroes.
Animalistic qualities.
Yeah, and nobody pays attention up until like they get the director of The Lighthouse behind the camera. Yeah. It's like, oh, now I'm interested in seeing animalistic hunky Skarsgård. But yeah, I think he did pretty well. I think he did well. I think Anya Taylor-Joy did pretty good in her performance. I think Quaise Bing was the one that stole the show for me.
Oh yeah, he's great. Yeah, he's great as usual. Yeah.
Do you guys think, I mean, I know it's early to predict, but Skarsgård and maybe even Anya Taylor-Joy will get Oscar nominations? Or do you think it's going to get
overall? If Willem Dafoe didn't get an Oscar nomination for The Lighthouse, there's no way they're going to get an Oscar nomination.
You don't think?
If Willem Dafoe, which is one of the best performances I've ever seen in my life, didn't get nominated by the Academy, there's no way they're going to.
You have to count this as being targeted to more mass audiences. Where The Lighthouse, that seemed like indie horror.
Definitely.
I mean, I could definitely see technical Oscars, but not performances, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I think the closest I would say would be Kidman and Bing. I wouldn't say anybody else per se. I think I think there's kind of like a little bit of a thing where it's like, kind of like how Dune was, where Dune basically was about more of the technical aspects than it really was about you know, getting anybody like acting recognition. I mean, I think the closest in Dune would have been like Ferguson or Stellan Skarsgård, in my opinion.
He's dead.
But I don't, yeah, obviously. So I think if anything, I think Clay's Bank could potentially get a nomination, maybe Nicole Kidman. I don't know if Skarsgård on Taylor Joy or Dafoe or Bjork would get anything recognized per se. But I don't know, we'll see. It's obviously very early in the awards season race, but it's, if like Coda has proven anything, it's like, you know, even those early releases can kind of give the Academy a suggestion about, you know, what could potentially happen.
You know, I would say that this should be nominated for a lot of technical Oscars, like best cinematography, costume design, production design, and all that. But then I've realized that The Green Knight didn't get a single Oscar nomination. So maybe this will fall victim to the same fate, unfortunately. The Lighthouse got a best cinematography nomination. It should have gotten more, but at least it got one. So, because like, it's so, like the way Eggers directed this whole movie is just so sophisticated. Like, he really left no stone unturned. You could tell that he was looking at every single facet of this production and was like, how do I make this like the best I can, and also put as much detail as possible to make it seem like this world is alive and breathing. And he does it so well, especially on a visual standpoint, because it's so striking. Like, there's a lot of these like wide landscape shots when they're walking through like mountains and fields. And it was like, I haven't seen scale like this, like natural scale with all these people around since like Lord of the Rings. It was striking. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I definitely admit, yeah, I mean, I think the cinema definitely step up, like, in cinematography in terms of scope. I think Eggers really took that big step from The Lighthouse and just really took advantage of it, because obviously it's a mainstream studio, so he's going to be taking advantage of, you know, the fact that he's getting the bigger budget, he's getting a lot more bigger actors, he's getting a lot of things that, you know, he probably were not at his disposal when he did The Witch and The Lighthouse. And I think that he definitely took full advantage of it. The visual effects are actually pretty impressive, since a lot of them are practical. I mean, some of the stuff you could tell is CG, but I honestly am fine with it, because they're good effects. It doesn't have to be realistic to me, I think, as long as they look good. So I think he really took advantage of a lot of like the budget that he was given.
Yeah, the only thing in terms of the visual effects that stood out to me like a sore thumb was a scene on a boat towards the very end. I thought the lighting, because it's daytime, I thought the lighting didn't mesh well with like the lighting they put on the actors. But maybe, I don't know, maybe Robert Eggers will come out and be like, oh yeah, every single water scene we rented a boat and shot on an actual river or ocean or something. But that was just one scene where I was like, it looks like it's, you know, visual effects here. And I thought the coloring just didn't match. But other than that, there wasn't really much I could tell that was visual effects.
I'm surprised that's the one that you consider the biggest distraction, because I thought there was one shot of like, it was like some sort of like dog or fox that looked digital. It was distracting.
And like howling or something.
Okay. Yeah. It looked like the fox from Antichrist or something, where it just looks like so fake.
There was one scene I noticed in the very beginning, and it's not visual effects. It's just kind of cheap. I was telling Kelvin about it because he noticed it too. It's during the first raid after we've met Alexander Skarsgård. And again, it's not a spoiler. He gets on top of something, and like there's a bunch of fighting going on in the background, and a character has an axe, and there's someone on the ground, and the character takes the axe and slams it down on the person. But it's the oldest trick in the book, because they don't slam it down. It's an optical illusion where they slam it like on the side of the person, if that makes sense. You know what I'm talking about?
I think stabbed in the arm
and like, oh, it's under their, you know, their armpit or something. It was something like that, and I noticed, and I was like, well, you tried. But other than that, I thought everything was pretty impressive.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we're just about out of time for our conversation on The Northman. So final thoughts?
I thought it was impressive. I might drop a hot take, but I'd probably rather we rewatch The Green Knight again, just because
Is that a hot take though?
I don't know.
Green Knight.
While it does have fantastical elements, it's pretty straightforward, where The Green Knight, I think, leaned in a lot more into the trippiness. But again, The Northman does incorporate elements that I thought were very unexpected and surprising. Great performances, great production design, attention to detail, violence, etc. We kind of said it all. I'm gonna go 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I know it sounds like I've been bashing on this film, but I don't know, honestly, I just think I had a lot of expectations for it. Because, you know, like, I think Eggers really, with the bigger budget, could have took, like, I felt like there was a lot more that I had expectations for. But otherwise, I think it was a good, I think it was still a very impressively well-shot film. I think, like, all the technical aspects were there, the acting was there. I really liked the size and the scale of this film. And I mean, it's a good film. I think I'm not going to put it at the level where I have The Lighthouse. I don't think anything's ever going to hit that level. But it's still a really solid film, and I think I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I thought this film was awesome. It only further proves that Eggers is one of the most talented filmmakers working today, and he should get a lot more projects off the ground because, man, he doesn't have to just do horror. He can use all his historical backgrounds and also historical research into projects that don't have to go down a horror route. You can do action, historical epics, you can do a lot of stuff. And I really, really loved it. I think it's a great, great epic fantasy in quotes, Viking story, visually striking, has a really compelling story. I really like the characters and the performances. It's a flat-out excellent movie. It opens today at Film Scene at the Chauncey, amongst other theaters across the nation. And I highly recommend checking it out if you would like to. And I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. I think it's awesome. So we're going to transition from The Northman to a horror film that came out last month called X, which is released by A24 and is the latest film from director Ty West. And it stars Mia Goth, Jenna Ortega, Martin Henderson, Brittany Snow, Owen Campbell, Stephen Urie, and Scott Mascuti. That's an interesting credit right there.
And, oh, it's actually Kid Cudi.
So. Or Kid Cudi, yeah.
Yeah, Kid Cudi.
Or that's what he's credited on IMDb and also Wikipedia, so, which is interesting. And the plot of X from IMDb, it's set in 1979, and it follows a group of young filmmakers who set out to make a rural adult film in Texas. And their reclusive elderly host catch them in the act, and the cast finds themselves fighting for their lives. What do we think about this film?
Well, I think this goes without saying, as the resident Bijou horror fanatic, this was wild. I think it deserves the title or the honor of being in the category of films I watched and I left going, was that a dream? Like, did I just dream that? Because it's crazy. It's not perfect. I think it does have a couple of setbacks, but it shocks me that this premise hasn't been done yet, because a lot of people are saying, you know, oh, Boogie Nights meets the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it works so well. Like, the fact that these people are, you know, shooting a home video that's, you know, a XXX feature, and then, you know, shenanigans ensue that involve killing, that just sounds like it would have happened actually back in the 70s or the 80s. The performances are great. Again, we said this with The Northman, the attention to detail and making it look like, you know, it's very grainy. And it's like, isn't it in Texas or something? Very kind of grimy and gritty and hot. It all works so well. And again, all those performances, especially from Jenna Ortega and Mia Goth, great.
Yeah, I was actually pretty impressed by this film. I think there was a lot of things that really worked in this film's favor. I think with the fact that they just rode that Boogie Nights meets Texas Chainsaw idea throughout the whole runtime. I think they really took advantage of it. It definitely has a lot of inspirations behind the cinematography. Obviously, Texas Chainsaw is being one of them, but you could definitely see a lot of the low budget quality with it. I think Mia Goth did a really good job in both roles. I think that was impressive. Like, once the credits started rolling and it said that she was that character, it was like, you gotta be kidding me. I could not tell that was Mia Goth in that makeup. And so I think it really worked out incredibly well. And it was just a fun time to watch. I think it really took advantage of everything that it had at its disposal.
I like this movie a lot more than I thought I was going to. I wouldn't say it's like in my top horror movies, but I was invested the entire time, which is, you know, no small feat. I think its real strength lies in just the underlying themes. I think that's where what really gripped me the most. You know, even besides like the final product, just like I'm assuming just the process of how they worked to get there. I just really appreciated that, those ideas.
Yeah, I thought this was a lot of fun. I'm not the most fresh on it because I saw it when it first came out in theaters and I haven't rewatched it since. But I remember walking out of the theater thinking like that was so much fun. And it's such a great idea for a horror film. Kind of like Orson said, like I'm shocked no one has ever done this before. Maybe someone did back in the 80s and like direct to VHS that has been released since. But it takes the basic idea, like we've talked about some slasher films before on Banter, particularly one called Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2022, which is not fun at all. And what makes this one work is that it has this really good sense of, at least what I got of it, it had this kind of self-aware tone to it. It's almost like it has this feeling of like, there is a little bit of quirkiness to it, but it also manages when it needs to be brutal and serious, it really goes all in on the violence and the gore. And it doesn't make these characters seem stupid or anything like that. I think these characters are actually really likable in some way and also identifiable too. And I like how you're able to cheer them on. Whereas in most slasher films, you feel like, oh, when are they going to die or anything, which is unfortunate to say, but it's like, they're so underdeveloped in most cases where it's like, you don't care about their fate. This one I genuinely did. And like some of the twists in this movie are just really, really out there. I was like, kind of like what we're talking about with the Northman, like I'm shocked there was some stuff that they were able to like show here, because it's just like it's so gritty and raw and disturbing too, but it's also like just a ton of fun. You could tell like everyone making this movie was having a great time, and I think in terms of its aesthetic tributes to like grindhouse cinema, it really nails the aesthetic. Kind of reminded me of Death Proof, just not as obnoxious, but yeah, X is great.
It's one of those films where, kind of what you were saying, Matthew, with the quirkiness, it's got dark humor. Where
yeah, it's funny. It's really funny.
There's a scene towards the end where characters are it's two women are standing by a lake, and you kind of already know something about what's in the lake, and you're like, is that what's going to happen? And you kind of want it to happen, and then it happens, and you're like, well, that's actually kind of funny. And it's just got this very dark sense of humor that makes you laugh, and you go, am I a disturbing person for laughing at that? And it's throughout the movie, and it just works so well. And another thing I love that it perfected, because it can be very hard to mess these up. And Matthew knows, because we're in the same class. I use a lot of these as well. It has great transitions from where you're about to see something happen, and then they immediately cut to something else that's essentially kind of the exact same thing or makes the same noise. And it works well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I would say like it definitely flows incredibly well, because it is a very simple setup. Like it's just the same typical horror film setup where it's like you're in some time period and there's like a group of like young adults going to a house somewhere where they either got creepy neighbors or something like horrific going on. But I think it really just does it so well, like it's executed so well. It definitely has like that vibe to it that I would get from like the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre on Chainsaw Massacre films, and it takes advantage of it. I think it really embraces what it is, and it knows what it is. It doesn't try to like subvert expectations or anything like that. It just keeps it simple. It keeps it where it needs to be. And doesn't forget what the concept is.
I felt a little bit of a dissonance in my reaction. I appreciated how, even like with the villains, like everything felt, they weren't just one-dimensional. So while giving everybody a bit more character, I think definitely worked to make me feel more emotion for everything. It did kind of take me out of things, like by slowing things down a little bit, and was less horrifying, I suppose. But I agree with what Matthew said, that when they needed to be horrifying, they really didn't hold back.
I think it's nice especially for A24. I'd say this is a lot of A24 horror is rooted in kind of like art house horror, which at least for me personally, that's the type of horror I gravitate towards a lot more. Like Hereditary and Midsommar are some of my favorite horror films of all time, because of just like how, not only how genuinely disturbing they are, but also just like how interpretive and also kind of like what you have to read into to discover that horror X is probably one of their most straightforward horror films that they've made so far, which is great in terms of gaining a larger audience, but it also just has such wide appeal. Like, I feel like this is one of those movies where, despite its disturbing nature, I could recommend this to a lot of different people, be like, hey, if you want to see a fun horror film that's like actually good and not like stupid, this is a good one to put on, because it has the qualities where it's like, when you hear the plot, and maybe if you've seen the trailer, please don't watch the trailer, the trailer sucks. It gives away a critical point, but if you watch the trailer, they're like, oh, this is going to be like, I don't know, some like Blumhouse horror film where it's like, it's very simple. And also it is a bit more silly. It's not like that at all, because there is actually a bit more to read into, especially with Mia Goth's character too, playing that dual role. I almost got the impression that maybe it's like kind of the same person too. A lot of it kind of reminded me of The Lighthouse in a way, how there's a lot of theories that Ephraim Winslow and Thomas Wake are the same person, just in different time periods, almost creating kind of like a purgatory feeling, at least within this house. So like being able to read into that adds another layer to it. But on the surface, if you were just to watch it as a straightforward horror film and you weren't trying to find like deeper meaning into it, you'd still get a great movie. So it works in both ways in terms of the audience it's trying to appeal to.
In my opinion, the setup can be a little slow. I think it takes about 5 to 10 minutes too long to get to the stuff. But then at the same time, I don't know what I would cut out. It's a relatively mm-hmm. short runtime. It's only like, what, an hour 40-ish minutes?
Standard movie runtime.
Yeah, so I don't know what I would cut out, because it feels like everything is important. But again, it's A24, and sometimes it's like, I saw a YouTube reviewer once say, it's like when someone signs on the contract to direct an A24 movie, or like, you know, they're going to, acquire it. It's like they say, well, it has to be a slow burn. But kind of going on with the themes and like a lot of the horror films they produce, sometimes I feel like, especially with Hereditary and Midsommar, just in my opinion, and while I enjoy those films, I think Ari Aster let his underlying themes like get to his head a little bit about how like big and broad they are, if that makes sense, where he's like, well, I'm creating art. Where this, I never got the vibe that it went into Ty West's head, that he was like, you know, creating something a little more highbrow than like just a jump scare fest. And that for me worked more than Hereditary and Midsommar does.
I mean, I think it does give a lot of open, and it does give a lot of ideas like open to interpretation, which I think is a good thing. Because I think sometimes it's a trap a lot of filmmakers fall into, where, you know, sometimes it's like they want to be about their themes, they want to be about the messages and the morals, and sometimes like they just like, oh no, you can see it this way, but I want you to see it this way. But I think with what Ty West did, it's like Ty West is just kind of letting the themes leave themselves open to interpretation, rather than just like trying to say, oh no, this is what you're supposed to see. Not trying to like, it doesn't try to subvert the expectations. It tries to leave it all open, which I think works pretty well. I think a lot of filmmakers do this, and sometimes it doesn't work out as well. I mean, because I think like ever since like The Briefcase and Pulp Fiction, which you could kind of argue this film might have took some inspiration from Pulp Fiction, because Pulp Fiction is kind of the same style in some way. But ever since The Briefcase and Pulp Fiction, like people have been trying to do what Pulp Fiction has been trying to do, is like try to leave so many things open to interpretation and not necessarily have an end goal in mind. And sometimes like the filmmaker wants you to read into something, but you exactly can't read into it. But sometimes it's just a little bit different and it just can't pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, you could look at it in two different ways. I mean, like, I don't think it's nearly as interpretive as, like, I've seen a lot of people actually like really read into this in terms of, it's kind of like it's gender politics too, and also kind of like the way it like subverts the concept of a slasher film, especially with recent changes in terms of like political opinions and also social opinions too. Personally, I didn't get that much out of it. I'm glad a lot of other people did, but like I viewed it more as being a straight up slasher. And in that regard, I think it really succeeds because I'm honestly not the biggest slasher fan in general. The only one I really found attached to was the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which this movie takes a lot of inspiration from too. But seeing a modern slasher like this with actual, with genuinely good characters and good writing, and in a way kind of building off on a way where it's like, it's not just about the kills. There actually is more to look into, especially with like the elderly couple to their relationship and how they're trying to see like, oh, they see kind of like this beauty and innocence in these younger people that they wish they had, but they unfortunately can't. It was oddly touching in some way. And I did not expect to think that going into this movie, which is really cool to say.
It made me as a young person feel sad because they're like, obviously, you know, it was a different time and they're like looking back on their youth and they're like, oh, well, I wish that was me. And then it makes me go, well, I'm still kind of young. I don't want to get old. It's, if you watch this and then like the first 10 minutes of Up, you're not going to have a good day. You're going to feel sad.
Yeah. Well, this movie did what Old tried to do, yeah. But whereas Old didn't work, this worked very well.
Yeah. Also, I like it in a way of subverting audience expectations is, and you made it, you know, an older person. Whereas you look at like most killers, like, you know, Michael Myers, Jason, whatever, they're, you know, they're ginormous, buff kind of spiritual entities, where this is like, you see an old person every day when you're walking on the street. And it's like, what if actually they are murdering someone? You don't know. And that makes the killer kind of, you know, real. And I get it, you know, serial killers are real, but it gives you a sense of like, anyone can do this. And they can, you know, find a way to get away with it. Like there's a scene where Pearl, the female killer, is like walking in a barn. And I think it's even in the trailer. And it's like one of the images that's been circulating on like reviews and promotional stuff. And just like looking at her, you know, her dress or blouse or whatever, her nightgown, that's what it is all bloody. And she's like holding a pitchfork and just something about it looks so disturbing.
I did feel like kind of ageist watching this movie. Not me ageist, but you know, just being old bad, like I don't want to feel that way, but I guess the characters were feeling that way, and so I felt kind of bad watching them feel that way.
Mm-hmm. I think
there is like some sympathy to be had with these characters, like these villains, because I think just like, you know, there definitely is like a thing where it's like, you know, oh, some things just weren't worked the way they were supposed to, as much as they, but at least like some things don't work like the way they used to in some ways. And obviously it's just these characters. And so you kind of feel some sympathy here for them, but it's just that obviously there's something that just doesn't justify like the violence that they are doing. And, but I think they do leave a lot for like some sympathetic reasons, which I think it's what's actually apparently this film is getting a prequel for its villain, which I think is going to be quite interesting to see.
I find it really fascinating how with a horror film like this, like, I mean, other horror films, yeah, where it's like you kind of sympathize with like the antagonist or anything, especially in a scenario like this where the antagonist, like really their motivation is to kill, they not only make them compelling, but you also oddly sympathize with both sides. It's not like in most horror films where it's like, oh, you want the heroes to live, but you don't want to root on the villain. This one, it's interesting because you see both sides of the coin and you're not really sure like who, I guess, whose side you're really more on. Of course, you don't condone this elderly couple killing people. That's not what I'm trying to say, but it's like, but I mean, if the characters were stupid and unlikable, then I would justify it, but they're not. The thing is with this is that it's like, I do like both the good guys and the bad guys. You see why they're either troubled, why they're even wanting to make this film, either they want to kind of break into like show business or even just trying to rekindle a relationship too. Like I really liked Jenna Ortega's character, who holds the microphone, the boom mic, yes. And kind of she wants to be devoted to her boyfriend, who's the camera operator, to the point where she's like, she's also very religious too, but then to the point where her innocence breaks, like, I want to be in the adult movie. And that scene, like seeing him like basically shoot his girlfriend, partaking in that, is like it's really uncomfortable, but it's also really sad too.
Dude, that scene broke me. Like, yeah, that was a heart, because I have a girlfriend and like I care about her very much. I'm like, I don't think she would ever do that to me, but it's like, that was a hard,
hard, it's hard to watch,
a hard scene to watch. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that, and especially with one of the characters too, with their death scene, when you were talking about kind of their good people, I'm like, what did this character do? Like, they didn't do anything. Like, that was the one I was rooting for. But I mean, I was rooting for all of them in a sense, mm-hmm. but that was the one where I was like, well, they didn't do anything. And then I'm like, well, these people are ruthless. So mm-hmm. I kind of like that a little bit, like that.
I don't think I have really anything else that I think the film is what it is. It has it's a really good experience. It doesn't necessarily try to dive too deep into it, but it does definitely like take advantage of its idea and its concept. It does lead up, it has a lot of really good twists and turns. And I think the characters are likable enough where it's like they're not just like characters who are just begging to be killed because they're annoying, because they actually like, there is a lot of likability and charm to these actors. I mean, I'm pretty impressed with Kid Cudi's acting in this film. I don't know why, because I think he...
Surprisingly good.
Yeah, surprised me. I mean, apparently he's been diving deep into acting rather recently with, like, Don't Look Up. Apparently he's been a part... Oh, yeah. He's going to be a part of, like, an HBO miniseries. Like, it's pretty interesting to see where that Kid Cudi's kind of, you know, coming back, like, in terms of, like, his popularity growth, because he started out pretty popular, just kind of took that, but didn't really have much going on in the middle of the 2010s decade, but now he's kind of going back to like his popularity and kind of taking advantage of it. And I think Huddy is really gonna be interesting to kind of see like where he'll go as an actor. I don't think he's gonna go to like Oscar winning performances, but I think he does good enough in like these performances where I think like he can work as like a supporting character in some way.
That's Wild Daniel that you said they're making a prequel, which I think would be very interested to see, especially, I guess I wonder what the timeline of that would be, but there's one scene in particular, you know, like in the basement that I would really be interested to see.
Yeah, I think it is going to be on Mia Goth's other character, Pearl, from what I know. Because I think this film, I think it made back its budget. And I think with the fact that, you know, people were interested in this idea and brought a lot to it. I think it's kind of good that, you know, they're making a prequel on this character, because she is a very interesting character in this film. And they are also bringing back Mia Goth too. So we'll see how that pans out.
I think there were also rumors that they were going to do a sequel text, like a proper sequel, to make it like a trilogy. So, but I don't think that's been confirmed yet. It was just rumored.
I don't know what you would do with a sequel to this movie. I could definitely see a prequel, and I'm glad they're moving forward with that. But I don't know. It's like, what do you do with it? Do they just follow a new group of people going to another place or something? Sure. Then it's going down the lines of being a crappy direct-to-video sequel.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, we're just about out of time for our conversation on X. So what are our final thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was really fun for an A24 horror film. It doesn't, I mean, I get their whole shtick is that they like to do the slow burn indie art house horror where, like, you know, a character's crying or something and a single tear slowly rolls down their face. But at the same time, you know, that works for some people. For me, it's a hit or miss. And what I liked what they were able to do with this was make it fun and also kind of have some of those underlying heavier themes. All the performances are great. The two main things I came for were the sex and the violence. And I was like, that's what it was promising. And it like delivered. It's like, no, it's Boogie Nights meets the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I think they did it very well. I'm looking forward to watching it again. It's hard because I really did praise it. I'm going to go a 7 out of 10 right now, but when I revisit it at some point, probably before the end of the year, I'm sure it'll get bumped up to an 8. So yeah, 7 out of 10 for now.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a movie that definitely embraces what it is. I think it knows that it's Boogie Nights meets Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It knows that it's gonna, it knows that it's gonna be kind of like a little bit cheesy. It is gonna feel a bit like a B movie, but I think I'm kind of glad that, you know, it embraces that quality and embraces that time period and embraces its characters. It knows what it wants to be. And I'm really glad I saw it. I think it really took advantage of what it had with it and just ran with it. And I'm gonna give it a 7 out of 10.
I agree. It was definitely more mainstream than I expected an A24 movie to be going in, but I enjoyed it. I might give it a 6 out of 10, but it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun. I really enjoyed it. Looking back on my experience in the theater, I was like, it's satisfying in ways where it's like as an atypical slasher, but also in terms of giving me a different experience that I wasn't expecting from a slasher. So it fills both voids. Check this movie out if you would like to. Please do not watch the trailer though, unless you want to be spoiled, because it's so bad looking back. But yeah, X is great. It's fun, gory, bloody. It has everything you want in a slasher film. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. So that concludes this episode of Bijou Banter. Tune in next week where we're going to be talking about Turning Red, the Pixar film on Disney Plus, and Windfall, which is a Netflix original that I really don't know anything about. But we're going to talk about it next week. Until next time, I've been Matthew.
I've been Orson.
I've been Daniel. I've
been Grace.
And we'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.